Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm Bob Mendelson, and this is the Bob's Your Uncle podcast. Today we're going to talk about 3 days and three nights. That sounds like 72 hours. It sounds like a weekend at Bernie's. It might sound like a lot of things to you, but it has to do with what took place a couple thousand years ago. Stay tuned. You can now find us and comment to us wherever you get your podcasts. Tell us what matters to you, what triggers your joy, what bothers you in the world. Let us know. We'll see where the spirit leads us. Wherever you are just now, whether you're out for your evening constitutional, or you're here in Australia, or back in the United States with friends, or all by yourself with your headset on, hey, wherever you are, thanks for joining us these 18 minutes. Of note, the opinions are strictly my own and those of my guests. On this date in history, the 7th of March, in 161, Marcus Aurelius became Emperor of Rome. He was best known later for his meditations on Stoic philosophy. In 1644, the state of Massachusetts in the U.S. established the first bicameral legislature in all of North America. In 1957, on the 7th of March, units of the United Nations Emergency Force took over the administration of the Gaza Strip. And in 1965, scores of demonstrators were injured, and the day entered history books as Bloody Sunday. This event helped to shift public opinion in favor of the civil rights movement. State troopers used nightsticks and tear gas to attack civil rights activists as they crossed this bridge in Selma, Alabama. And that's the historical marker of the week. I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Yesterday, I spent some good time with a Jewish doctor here in Sydney, and he began to tell me that he liked Jesus, but of course that they had made him into something he never was. And as I unpacked this with the doctor, who was not treating me at the time, we merely were having a coffee together, I found him to be repeating the lines of the old author Hugh Schoenfeld. And I wondered how influential Schoenfeld had been. Schoenfeld wrote the book back in the 60s called The Passover Plot. And he was a scholar. He was from the UK. He published, I think, a translation probably just of the New Testament and wrote it from a Jewish perspective, something like Amy Jill Levine has done with her Jewish annotated New Testament decades later. Schoenfeld argued that Jesus never really died. Of course, he did later. He wouldn't say that he never died, but he didn't die according to the story, of course, that Yeshua tried to fulfill messianic prophecy that he read, and he was well aware of messianic expectation. It was high in those days. He wanted to fulfill it. He realized, hey, I was born in Bethlehem. I could be the messianic hero who comes from there. He started preaching. He gathered friends, gathered people to associate with him. Schoenfeld doesn't really talk about the miracles, walking on water, feeding 5,000, but he talks about the messianic fulfillments. And what he targets towards the last is the great Passover fulfillment, Jesus, the Lamb of God, who dies for us. And he was convinced that John, or whoever wrote the Gospel of John, wanted to make sure that Yeshua saw to his own fulfilling prophecy. He wouldn't die on the cross. He wouldn't even be on the cross for more than a few hours because he had to be taken down before Shabbat. That's obviously from Torah, from Jewish understanding. He says that they gave him water, which was mixed with some kind of vinegar that was more like a drug, if you will, that knocked him out. And then Joseph of Arimathea, who was one of his secret followers, and Nicodemus, took him down and brought him to Joseph's freshly hewn grave, where they put him in there. And remember, they put him in there with aloes and myrrh, aloes to heal the wounds and spices of some kind to make it fresh. So that they were complicit in this resurrection story. It was fascinating to listen to an intelligent Jewish man in 2024 talk about his own perspective on the death narrative, the resurrection narrative that's recorded, not just in one, but in all the biographies, all the stories about Yeshua recorded in the Newer Testament. I was fascinated by that. And then a man wrote me today, I'm going to put these two together, and he's a believer in Jesus, and he wanted to know about the 3 days and three nights story. You might know that there is some controversy about the length of time Jesus was supposed to be in the tomb. And was he supposed to be in there for 3 days, three nights? That is 72 hours. And if he was, well, he didn't exactly do that, you know, because he was in from the afternoon of the Friday and then raised, if you will, on that Sunday. So that doesn't make sense. People are wanting to know about apparent contradictions. Maybe I'll read to you from the biography written by Matthew the tax collector about Yeshua. It says, this is from Matthew chapter 12, beginning at verse 38. We always read from the number one bestseller of all times, the Bible. Might as well get to it now. Matthew says, "Then some of the scribes and Pharisees said to Yeshua, 'Teacher, we want to see a sign from you.'" I guess, do a trick for us, will you? "But Yeshua answered and said to them, 'An evil and adulterous generation craves for a sign, and yet no sign will be given to it but the sign of Jonah the prophet. For just as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the sea monster, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh will stand up with this generation at the judgment and will condemn it because they repented at the preaching of Jonah. And behold, something greater than Jonah is here." Matthew records more of the story. 3 days and three nights. Sounds like 72 hours to me, but first things first, let's clear this up. There's no way that Yeshua was in the tomb for 72 hours exactly. He died in the daytime, right? 9 to 12, he's on the cross. He gives up the ghost. He sings, "Biado Afkid Ruchi," from the Adon Olam prayer. And he gives up the spirit. "Into your hands I commit my spirit." And he rose in the nighttime before dawn sometime later. Whatever we calculate, it won't be exactly 72 hours. That's comfortable for me as a Jewish person. I think the key texts to answer this question of another brother are in the story of Esther. Remember the Purim story. We're coming up right on that in just a few weeks. And in the gospel or biography by Luke. So Esther, Queen Esther, married to Ahasuerus in Persia, that becomes Iran later. She finds out that the king, through Haman, who has brought an edict that all Jewish people are supposed to die. Well, she's one of those, and so her uncle Mordechai, she have a conversation, and Esther asks him to get all the Jewish people to fast, have a 3-day and 3-night fast. This is recorded in Esther chapter 4. But then she approaches the king on the 3rd day. That's in chapter 5 of Esther, which doesn't work if the requirement is 72 plus hours. 3 days, 3 nights can mean on the 3rd day. That's what I want you to hear. The other text is Luke 24, one of my favorite chapters in the whole Bible. And there the angels greet the women at the tomb after Jesus dies. They bury him. They seal the tomb with, if you will, like wax, a preventative, so that the stone which was in front of it couldn't be rolled away. And if it did, they'd see the seal broken. The angels are there. The women show up with spices again. And the angels say, "Why are you looking for the living one among the dead? He's not here. He's risen. Remember," they say, "how he spoke to you when he was still in Galilee, saying, 'The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified, and the 3rd day rise again.'" That's in Luke 24, verses 5 and 6. On the 3rd day, not the 4th day, the 3rd day. So this boils down to how Jewish people count days. And really, I think how all people do. Think about this. If I say to you today, today's a Thursday, you know it's the 7th of March. You know that because we put the historical marker in. If I say I'll see you after a couple days, that's not exactly precise. Do I mean after 48 more hours pass, then I will see you on the next day? Or does it mean in a couple of days? Even though couple means two, most people today are looser with the meaning of the word, much like in English we use the term a few. But back to Jewish days. Today, as I write this, it's Thursday. In Jewish reckoning, it's day 5 of the week. And borrowing the language of Genesis 1, where it's evening and then morning, evening and morning, day 5 began last night at sundown, which is in the Gregorian calendar Wednesday. So Thursday began on Wednesday. But Gregory and Hebrew don't always get along. Now don't get lost here. This is pretty good. Day 6 of the Jewish calendar begins at sundown tonight, Thursday, and it ends with sunset or so on Friday. See how this works? So here's how I see it. Again, don't get lost. Write it down if you need to. The 1st day of Yeshua's death, burial, and resurrection is Friday. That's why we call it Good Friday. 2nd is Saturday, and 3rd is Sunday. If it's required to be 3 days and 3 nights, then Friday is actually day 6, Saturday's day 7, Sunday's day 1. Okay, that's 3 days that are covered. And since in the Jewish way of thinking, any part of a day counts as the whole day, the Latins use the idea of synecdoche, then Jesus is in the tomb on day 6, day 7, day 1. Really? Yeah, day 6 is Thursday night, Friday. Day 7 is Friday night, Saturday. And day 1 is Saturday night, Sunday. At least that's how I see it and can live with it. Now, there are some who are listening to the podcast who are believers who write me at this season of the year and want to unpack this conundrum and who think differently. They say Wednesday he died and the great high Sabbath, and there's still, look, you guys who say this are still my brothers and sisters. It won't stop us being family together. But I don't think the whole point is 3 and 3, but that Yeshua was going to die, be buried like Jonah deep in the whale, and rise again like Jonah burst out of the whale and lived again. Thank God for the death, burial, and resurrection of our Savior. At least that's how I see it. Do you have a different view? Why not write me and let's have a chat? What do you think about all this? Why don't you write me, bobmendo@aol.com, or comment on an Instagram or TikTok to me? I'd love to know what you're thinking. You know, last week, at the end of the podcast, I mentioned the Kansas City Chiefs and possibly winning the Super Bowl, and sure enough, they did. And many people gave testimony of thanks to God for helping them play, helping them enjoy the game. I just value that so much, not just that my team won the championship back-to-back last year and this year, but that several of them were saying thanks to God. I don't know if that inspires you or bothers you. If you think religion is just a big hoax or an opiate of the people, I suppose it's a downer, but for me and for those of us who have a religious bent, have a faith bent, and who love football, even today I'm going out to see the Sydney Swans in the opening game of their season. Football just finished in one country, and now it's starting in another. I like hearing people share their testimony of how God means a lot to them and helps shape their lives. That's the way I've lived for the last several decades, and maybe you have too. Let's keep lifting up the name of the Lord together. Whether we play football or we paint daisies, whether we're truck drivers, dentists, or just one of those people, like a student or like someone who's ever learning. However you do it, make sure that your life is a testimony to God, and He'll be pleased and you will be benefited. Shalom. Until next week then, when things seem bleak or uncertain, look up to God. He's in His heaven. And Bob's your uncle. Shalom.